from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Attorney General John Ashcroft and two former FBI directors will face tough questions on Tuesday over why authorities failed to prevent the September 11th attacks and how 70 separate investigations did not uncover the hijacking plot. Ashcroft, former FBI Director Louis Freeh, and former acting FBI Director Thomas Pickard will testify before the National Commission examining the performance of law enforcement prior to the 2001 attacks that killed about 3,000. They are expected to face tough grilling, in part about an August 6, 2001 secret briefing in which the CIA told George W. Bush, more than a month before the attacks, that authorities knew Al-Qaeda members were in the United States. George W. Bush will hold his first formal press conference of the year on Tuesday to discuss the situation in Iraq, where U.S. forces are battling both Sunni and Shiite Muslim insurgents. After a week of the bloodiest fighting in Iraq since the ouster of Saddam Hussein, Bush was scheduled to appear in the East Room of the White House at 8:30 p.m. to take questions from the White House press corps in a live telecast. The White House said it has asked U.S. television networks for time to broadcast the news conference. The Republican Party's hope that its convention in New York would highlight a nation healed after the September 11th attacks could backfire as the White House comes under fire for its handling of the crisis and the war in Iraq, strategists said on Monday. George W. Bush's election effort is plagued with questions on whether his administration could have prevented the attacks, and holding his party's convention just minutes away from the World Trade Center, where nearly 3,000 people were killed, could make matters worse, they said. It was the wrong place to go from the beginning, veteran Republican political consultant Roger Stone said. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
An obese German cat, six times the normal weight, has gone on a hunger strike at a Berlin animal shelter after being taken from his owner, who had fed him 4 pounds of mints daily, Bild newspaper reported on Saturday. Mikesh, weighing nearly 41 pounds, was brought to the animal shelter on April 1st and was so overweight he could not take more than 4 steps without becoming exhausted. His elderly owner was at the same time taken to a nursing home. Shelter officials said 6-year-old Mikesh felt lost without his meat-feeding owner and stopped eating altogether when he was put on a diet to gradually lose weight. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The only thing madder than mad cow disease is our government's mad cow policies. Take the case of Creekstone Farms Premium Beef, a small enterprising company in Kansas that produces top quality beef. To assure both U.S. and foreign buyers that its product is free of mad cow disease, Creekstone said that it would exceed USDA's minimal testing standards and pay to have every single one of its cows privately tested. Great! Who could be against more testing and such innovative entrepreneurship? The U.S. Department of Agriculture, for one. The big beef lobbyists, for two. In another case of Bushite bourgeois, USDA notified Creekstone that it does not allow private testing, even by certified labs. This from an administration that's privatizing everything from its wars to your water supply. Why? The official rationale is that only the government can assure food safety. But how can testing 100% of cows be less safe than USDA's program that inspects less than 1%? The real reason for USDA's intransigence is that the big beef companies don't want to do 100% testing themselves, and they want no competition from anyone who does. They say that Creekstone's testing would, quote, mislead us consumers, for we might think that 100% testing produces a safer product. Aside from the fact that more testing does assure more safety, Creekstone is not even making such a claim. It's only claiming that, indeed, it tests 100% of its cows. Then it's up to us consumers to decide in the marketplace which beef we prefer. But the Bushites and the big beef lobbyists refuse to allow such consumer choice, declaring that Creekstone cannot advertise that every ounce of its beef is fully tested. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a pile of BS! To help bring sanity to Washington's mad cow policies, call the USDA's comment office, 202-720-5627.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. You...
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border. 7 minutes past the hour, starting our program here on the 13th of April. Some people think 13 is an unlucky number. Interesting. So one of these days we'll do a story on the history of that. It's actually supposed to be a very lucky number for some folks. So, and it always has been for me. So I'll take it as a good day. 269 days since the outing of Joe Wilson, 328 days since we started looking for weapons of mass destruction. Some interesting news about that today, by the way. 909 days from the anthrax attack and 920 days since we declared that Osama would be found dead or alive. But back to those weapons of mass destruction. And of course, in this, right now, I'm not sure she still is, but just before I started the program, Janet Reno was testifying. We heard Louis Freeh this morning, the former director of the FBI. This afternoon, we're going to hear John Ashcroft. And so we've got some things to share with you about that. We, the people, do have a right to know what's going on in the United States. And it is becoming increasingly clear that when George Bush came into office, one of the first priorities of his administration and his intelligence service was, or at least the orders that came down to his intelligence service, were to bury investigations that had to do with the Bin Laden family. After all, the Bin Laden family had bankrolled George W. Bush in Harkin Oil. The Bin Laden family were business partners with George H.W. Bush. The Bush family relationship, business relationship with the Bin Laden family, both in oil and construction, goes back many years. And this embarrassing name kept popping up. And increasingly, as we're seeing in these hearings, that was shelved, shall we say. And at the same time, young George had this obsession with Iraq, and as I've said many times, I'm not a subscriber to the single conspiracy theory. I am a subscriber to the multiple conspiracy theory, as it were. It seems to me that there were people in the administration, Pearl Wolfowitz, who were actually true believers in the idea that you can force democracy on people, and they will love you for it. That you can go in and bomb a country, take out a dictator, kill a few thousand civilians, and people will say, isn't this wonderful what they just did? Let's have a government just like theirs. And to make it even more effective, you can go in and you can say, oh, and by the way, all you unemployed people, we're dropping all of the trade barriers that you had that protected your domestic industries, because we don't believe in that. You know, that's not part of the conservative religion. We believe that corporations should be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want, regardless of national borders. And so all of a sudden, all of your local and domestic industries, which are not particularly efficient, but at least they're providing jobs and income, they're going to have to compete with that 14-year-old girl in Malaysia that we're competing with now who works for 50 cents an hour. And you're going to see the import of all kinds of foreign goods. And all of the really viable businesses in the country, the telephone system, the power system, those things that, you know, were traditionally part of the commons, or even, you know, the defense industry. Yes, there is one in Iraq. The transportation industry, the business of making cars, of building railroads, things like that. Yeah, no, they're not building any decent cars there now. But, you know, they would like to. We're going to sell all of those companies, or even the possibility of those companies, to friends of the Bush administration. In fact, one of George Bush's brothers has set up a company to come into your country and sell off the assets of your country to these wonderful American multinational corporations. Well, they're not really quite American multinational corporations like Halliburton. They reincorporate offshore in the Caymans or in the Bahamas so they don't have to pay American taxes. But we call them American multinational corporations because they have their headquarters in the United States and they give so much money to our politicians. So, you know, you should be happy that we're doing this. Oh, and by the way, the oil, we'll take care of that. We're going to give protection of the oil over to a private army, 13,000 to 15,000 men, owned by, run by, Ahmed Chalabi, the guy we're going to put in charge of your country. You can ignore the fact that in Jordan he was sentenced to 22 years at hard labor for bank fraud, that he hasn't been in Iraq since he was 10 years old, 50 years ago. You can just ignore that and just think of him as one of you. Well, the Iraqis clearly are not, as Wolfowitz and Pearl believed, and I think they sincerely believed. I really don't think that they would have argued so strongly for this if they didn't think that the outcome was going to be what they thought the outcome was going to be. I really don't think any of them wanted what we have now. And so, you know, in their odd little way, they really thought that there was some logic to, you know, what I just laid out, to doing what we did. That it was practical, that it was possible. And Don Rumsfeld was so sure of it, he said, "Hey, we don't even need a large army after the initial taking of the city of Baghdad. No problem." But back to those weapons of mass destruction. Day 323 since we began searching for them. We've pulled David Kay and his team out. David Kay, back in December, was when he first said, hey, let me out of here. And they talked him into sticking around for another month, according to his new memoirs. And he did. In fact, they said, if you leave now, it will look like things are becoming unraveled. Right. And so David Kay, who I think that they thought, you know, we can depend on this guy. He's our guy. He's on our team. He's on our side. He's going to, if he doesn't find at least weapons of mass destruction, he'll find enough people who are willing to say that there were weapons of mass destruction. He'll find a few scientists who will say, yeah, I was working on that. He'll grease a few palms. He'll do whatever it takes. We'll get a report that they can at least use on Fox News and convince people that there was something there. That there was a good reason for nearly 700 of our young men and women to die in Iraq. And, of course, as we know, the number is much higher than 700 because the Pentagon and the Defense Department don't count Americans who died in Iraq as having died in Iraq if they die of their wounds after they've been evacuated from the battlefield. We really don't know what the real number is. We do know that something like somewhere between 12 and 19,000 medical evacuations have occurred. This extraordinary tragedy. Well, back to those weapons of mass destruction. I share this with you not by way of saying, I want to put a very clear caveat on this, not by way of saying that I believe that this is necessarily the case. But it is important for us to know what the people in the Middle East believe. And this is a story. This is a story out of Tehran. It's from the Tehran Times, out of Iran, part of the Axis of Evil. So you may feel free to immediately discount it if you're one of those who believes that everything that comes out of Iran must be a lie. Feel free. But there are many in the Middle East who don't believe that everything that comes out of Iran is a lie, particularly the people in Iraq, particularly the Shiites, the dominant religion in Iran, also the majority in Iraq, and many other people around the Middle East. And this is a story that's getting play on Al Jazeera, Al Khabara, and many of the other news networks. It's being picked up and circulated around the world, and particularly around the Muslim world, and that's why you need to know about it. Whether it's true or not, this is the perception, this is the story that is being promulgated. Basra, April 12th. This is yesterday's Tehran Times. 50 days after the first reports that the U.S. forces were unloading weapons of mass destruction in southern Iraq. See, the Tehran Times first reported this almost 2 months ago. New reports about the movement of these weapons have been disclosed. So we've got new weapons inspectors in there. We don't really know anything about this new guy and his team. You know, what's up with these people? Sources in Iraq speculate that occupation forces are using the recent unrest in Iraq to divert attention from their surreptitious shipments of weapons of mass destruction into the country. An Iraqi source close to the Basra governor's office told the MNA, this is the news service, the Iranian news service, that new information shows that a large part of the WMD, which was secretly brought to southern and western Iraq over the past month, are in containers falsely labeled as containers of the Marisek Shipping Company, and some consignments bearing the labels of organizations such as the Red Cross or the USAID in order to disguise them as relief shipments. The source, who spoke on condition of anonymity, added that Iraqi officials, including forces loyal to the Iraqi Governing Council, that's Ahmed Chalabi, the convicted bank swindler, stationed in southern Iraq, have been forbidden from inspecting or supervising the transportation of these consignments. He went on to say that the occupation forces have ordered Iraqi officials to forward any questions on the issue to the coalition forces. Even the officials of the international relief organizations have informed the Iraqi officials that they would only accept responsibility for relief shipments which have been registered and managed by their own organizations. The Iraqi source also confirmed the report about suspicious trucks with fake Saudi and Jordanian license plates entering Iraq at night last week, stressing that the Saudi and Jordanian border guards did not attempt to inspect the trucks, but simply delivered them to the U.S. and British forces stationed on Iraq's borders. However, the source expressed ignorance about whether the governments of Saudi Arabia and Jordan were aware of such movements. And they go on to quote this guy, who's a professor of physics at Baghdad University. He says a group of his colleagues who are highly specialized in military, chemical, and biological fields have either been bribed or threatened during the last weeks. This since the departure of David Kay and the installation of the new guy. Have been either bribed or threatened during the last weeks to provide written information on what they know about various programs and research centers and the possible storage of WMD equipment. The professor also said these people have been openly asked to confirm or deny the existence of research or related WMD equipment. A large number of these scientists, who are believed to be under the surveillance of U.S. intelligence operatives, have claimed that they refuse to comply with this request, that if they refuse to comply with this request, they may be killed or arrested on charges of concealing the truth if these weapons are found by the Bush administration in the future. Can you imagine being in that situation, being one of those scientists? He said that the Iraqi scientists believe their lives would be in danger if they declined to cooperate with the occupation forces, especially when they recall that senior U.S. officer Michael Peterson once said, quote, Iraqi scientists are in any case a threat to the U.S. administration, whether they talk or not. So, what shall we, the people, learn about what's going on in Iraq? It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Dixie moonlight, Swanish yard, headed homebound just once more to my Mississippi Delta home.
Some music is just so good.
Southland's got that grand garden.
Makes you want to be a DJ again. 25 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I'm sharing with you this article in the Tehran Times. It's just a couple more paragraphs, and it gets even a little more interesting here. I'm not saying that this is real. This is the Tehran Times. But, you know, it's... And in fact, in the next hour, I want to get into the story of John O'Neill very quickly. We've got the ballad of John O'Neill, in fact, to share with you, speaking of music. But here it goes on with this. Actually, before I read the rest of it, let's just get some response. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to respond to this thing. This guy here, professor at Baghdad University is quoted as saying, Iraqi scientists would believe their lives would be in danger if they didn't essentially make things up. Goes on to say, a source close to the Iraqi governing council said, quote, in the meantime, many suspect containers disguised as fuel supplies have been moved about by some units of the U.S. Special Forces. The move has been carried out under heavy security measures. Also, there are unofficial reports that the containers held biological and bacteriological toxins in liquid form. It is possible that the news about the discovery of the WMDs would be announced later. So this is the word on the street, as it were. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not a great deal, Tom. I hope you had a happy Easter.
Thank you. I did. You too?
Yeah, pretty good. You know, one of the most egregious examples of political stupidity that I've ever seen, well, you consider the source, was for the Bush administration to allow June 30th to become an important date in Iraq for Iraqis. Because when it becomes clear that the so-called handover of power is no such thing, things are really going to explode. You know, Fallujah and what's happening there right now has become an enormous rallying cry throughout the Middle East, throughout the Muslim world. I don't think that the people in charge, if that's the correct term, have any clue what they're stirring up.
Yeah, well, and this is the problem. I mean, you know, Bush went in without a plan after, you know, they just figured this, you know, hubris eventually, you know, got them. They just figured, hey, we'll go in there, we'll be greeted as liberators, end of discussion, right? And we've got this, you know, we got Chalabi, he's a bank business swindler, but, you know, he's a good guy, and he'll just take over and everything will be fine, and you know, they blew it. And now, and then they say, you know, well, we've got this election coming up. You know, we can't. You know, George Bush, he's got to turn this thing over to another government by the 30th, and it's like an instant invitation to power vacuum. And there is no, you know, we're not saying here's who we're going to give it to. There's none of that. There's been no scheduled elections. We're desperately asking the UN. You know, not in the news. It's not in the news, but I mean, the UN is there, and the Bush administration is, please, please do something. You know, get somebody in place, please. We've got it. We got to get out of this thing before, you know, we got an election coming up. You know, help. And the UN is starting to go, well, I don't know. This is, anyhow, Chris, thanks for the call and pointing that out. I appreciate it. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Patrick in New Jersey is on the line. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Yes, Tom. Hey, great show. Good to hear you again.
Thanks. We got about 30 seconds here.
Okay. Well, just very quick then. I don't really agree with the mistake theory that they blew it and that this was a mistake. You know, they're not going to withdraw all U.S. troops. The plan is to maintain the occupation indefinitely.
Oh, I agree.
Permanent military bases. So I don't think they really care that there's Americans being killed. You know, they're willing to sacrifice however many Americans it takes to secure the $1 trillion worth of oil that they want.
Yeah,
so,
I'm not. You know, I
don't think that this was a mistake. They just don't care. You know, that Americans are going to get killed to accomplish
thanks, Patrick. Good comment. But even from the point of view of politics, they would have to care. I mean, let's say that they're total sociopaths, and they would still politically have to care. I don't buy it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 29 minutes past the hour.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In an effort to cut costs by more than $900 million, chemical giant DuPont announced yesterday that it intends to cut 6% of its global workforce by the end of the year. Of the 59,000 DuPont employees around the globe, about 3,000 will be laid off, with two-thirds of the job cuts coming in the U.S. and Canada. The chemical giant also expects to lose 450 contractors and cut another 500 positions through attrition. DuPont employees were informed of the cuts Monday morning in an email. Once word of the firings got out, DuPont shares rose 66 cents on the New York Stock Exchange.
The ball may be rolling toward a strike of 100,000 service and support workers at SBC Communications. Last week, their union, the Communications Workers of America, gave the company 30 days' notice of a walkout, which is contingent on a strike ballot being voted on this month. The results of that are expected on April 29th, which just happens to be the day before SBC shareholders meet in Columbus, Ohio. After an extended weekend off, the company and union resumed bargaining today. Affordable health insurance and limits on outsourcing and offshoring of SBC jobs remain the two major points of contention.
Indian Tea Garden workers are in a nightmarish situation. More than 800 workers have died of starvation, malnutrition, and disease in the abandoned tea gardens of North Bengal, according to the Indian People's Tribunal on Human Rights and the Environment. The tea plantations closed suddenly and without notice as managers cut off electricity and water to the homes of laborers, who are reportedly surviving on wild roots and rats. At least 25 tea gardens have closed in the past 3 years, leaving 1 million workers unemployed. There are 160 gardens in North Bengal, and many more may soon close due to a crash in global market prices.
A new report from the Palestinian Authority says unemployment in the Gaza Strip and West Bank has topped the 50% mark, and 8 out of 10 Palestinians in the occupied territories live below the poverty line. On average, Palestinians who are working manage just $2 a day in compensation. Construction of an Israeli wall around the Palestinian territories is blamed for many being thrown out of work, no longer able to freely travel to previous jobs in Israel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's official, a job in the U.S. Armed Services is the most hazardous American profession. More than 675 service members have died in Iraq since the beginning of President Bush's invasion last year, 74 since April 1st alone. Meanwhile, the toll of the wounded keeps on piling up. According to United Press International, the military made more than 18,000 medical evacuations in the first year of fighting.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And George Bush is going to be coming around tonight. News conference time. Is he going to drop a bombshell? Is he going to try and change the subject? Is he going to say something good and useful and interesting that will enlighten all of us? We shall see. Be an interesting time. Just as an FYI, in our next hour, Naomi Klein just got back, the author of No Logo and many other great pieces. You see her writing very frequently on commondreams.org and many of the other great websites. She will be back on. She'll be on the program in the next hour, in the second hour of our show, and just back from Iraq. And also our book of the month, not my new book that's just out called We the People, but by Robert Dahl. It's called How Democratic is the American Constitution? You can find that at BuzzFlash.com as a fundraiser for BuzzFlash. And also there's a good book review there that Tim King and I wrote, an amazing book. But anyhow, Patrick in New Jersey, Patrick, you felt you didn't finish your point. You want to finish it?
Yes, Tom, hi.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for letting me come back to finish.
Sure.
By the way, excellent that you're going to have Naomi Klein on later. I can't wait to hear her. She's very, very good.
Yeah, she is.
But, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm too cynical or anything, but, you know, like you mentioned before, there are conspiracies, and clearly the reasons they claimed about weapons of mass destruction for getting us into the war were basically distortions and lies and misrepresentations, and I think they knew that all along.
Well, hang on just a second. Let me just stop you right there, Patrick. Why would an administration that knows that they're going to be caught on the lie tell a lie?
Because they think they're not going to be caught, because, you know, there's all these very sycophantic news media here, and they have $100 million for their election campaign to create great lies and distortions. They feel confident they can get away with it.
But they're not. And I hope they're not. I can't imagine that they really thought that they could. Here's my thinking on that, and that is that you know, they were cherry picking intelligence. They were cherry picking information at the CIA. You know, they said, well, you know, there's a possibility, but you know, we don't have any solid information. It doesn't look like it. Hans Blix was saying, hey, it doesn't look like it. The rest of the world was saying, we don't have enough proof to go to war over this thing, but there was this echo chamber effect. The Bush administration is so insulated. They have so isolated themselves. George Bush has surrounded himself with yes men, and as has Rumsfeld and as has Ashcroft, to the point that they only hear the opinions that they want to hear.
But Tom, you're still seeming to say that you think that this was a mistake on their part. I'm not sure I can believe that, because the evidence was so overwhelming that there was no WMDs there, yet they foisted these lies constantly on us for 9 months to get us to go to war.
But see, these are the same people who sold Saddam the WMDs in the first place. They had good reason to know that at some point there had been stuff there, because they had sold it to him when Daddy Bush was back in office.
Right, but under Scott Ritter destroyed it all during the inspections in 1998.
You know that, and I know that. But the Office of Special Plans that Don Rumsfeld had set up within the Pentagon, which was taking information, quote, directly from sources, right, basically from Chalabi's informers, was actually getting information. It turns out now we know it was lies. It was, you know, Chalabi was lying to get himself into power, basically, he and his buddies.
Right.
And just like he lied, you know, with his $600 million was lost in the Petrobank scandal. You know, he started a bank and he lied his way through this.
Yeah.
And they passed the lies up to Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush. And I think that these guys just willingly said, oh, cool, you know, there's a possibility it's real. I'm willing to believe it's real.
They're willing to sacrifice however many Americans and Iraqis, too, that it takes to get that $1 trillion worth of oil. They don't give a damn how many Americans get killed as long as the oil is secured for control by American interests. You're going to have permanent military bases there. This June 30th turnover is not a turnover. There's still going to be a large American force occupying the country indefinitely with permanent military bases.
This is a
puppet government that's going to be set up in
sure.
June 30th.
And everybody knows it. And in Iraq, everybody knows it. And you're getting to, you know, one of the real issues here. And this is, as I've said before, if we had had an actual legitimate debate about this in the United States, and then we had voted, I wouldn't have a problem with whatever the decision was. Where democracy got short-circuited and short-changed by the Bush administration was that we never had the debate, because the argument that they were putting forward, and Wolfowitz talked about this in that Vanity Fair article 6 months ago, where he said that, you know, WMDs was just the bureaucratic reason we had to have something to sell to the American people.
Yeah.
But the real reason
was take over the country and the government.
That's right. The real reason was that the United States consumes 25% of the planet's oil. We are only 6% of the world's population. We consume a quarter of the planet's oil, and more than half of the oil that we consume. Now, keep in mind, back in 72, 73, when we had the oil crisis under Nixon, we were consuming 22, 23% imported oil. Now, more than 53% of the oil that we consume is imported, and more than half of it comes from that region of the world.
Right.
So,
and let me put another point in there for you, Tom, which you probably know about, but the other thing is not just to have access to the oil for ourselves, but geopolitically, these people like Wolfowitz and Pearl and Rumsfeld, they want to have control over the supplies of oil that go to the rest of the world, particularly China, Japan, and Europe.
No, actually,
because
I think
oil is not just for us. It's to make sure that our military interests control the access of other people's sources of oil, too.
Yes, yes and no. The flip side of that you're missing, Patrick, is that in Iraq, FINA, the French company, Lukoil, the Russian company, and a German company whose name escapes me, had had all signed contracts, and these three contracts, the Russian one in particular, and the Chinese oil company that I forget the name of, had signed contracts with Saddam Hussein for roughly 85 to 90% of his total oil production. And the Russian contract constituted almost half of Saddam's total oil production. And so it wasn't that, you know, we want to control who it goes to so much as we didn't want them to control it.
Right, but we're going to have 200,000 troops there forever.
Yeah, and the reason why we couldn't do that was because we had this embargo, right? We couldn't sign those contracts because we had this embargo going. There was this political thing, so there had to be a way around it. But anyway, I think that what these guys are saying is, okay, if we want to protect our oil interests, because that is our security interest, because our nation, you know, unless we're going to go to alternative energy sources, which this administration was unwilling to consider,
right.
They literally don't want to talk about it. Unless we're willing to go to alternative energy sources, we've got to nail down the world's oil supplies. And there's all that gas north of Afghanistan. We've got to build that pipeline across there. And so we put in what's-his-name in Afghanistan.
Karzai.
Yeah, Karzai, who used to work for...
Unocal.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're great, Patrick, who used to work for Unocal. And, you know, and who's building the pipeline now, by the way,
yep.
and who had been negotiating with the Taliban back in 2000 to build the pipeline, and in 2001... And we're going to go into Iraq and we're going to take the oil. Now, if they had come to the American people and said, hey, listen, this is the deal. We need to nail down the Middle East because that's where the oil is. And without the oil, our economy is going to go to pot. We won't be able to defend ourselves. We won't have jet fuel for our jets. We won't be able to blow off, you know, send off rockets. We're going to have all kinds of problems. It's going to be a disaster.
Company won't be able to make lots of profits.
I think that was secondary. I think that was fallout. That was very nice fallout for them. But I can't believe that that's the main reason why they went in. I think they really believe that this is the main reason to go in there was that it was in the interest of national security of the United States. And because they believe, I mean, their whole worldview was that the national security of the United States is based on our access to oil. And we had to nail down the oil, not just of Iraq, but also of Saudi Arabia, which is next door, also ultimately of Iran, which is next door, also of the United Arab Emirates, which is next door, also of Kuwait, which is next door.
Yeah.
We had to really nail that down. And to do that, we had to have a footprint in the area.
Oh, yeah.
And when we had that footprint in the area, it was our bases in Saudi Arabia that was the leftovers from the 91 Gulf War. And the whole rationale that Osama bin Laden laid out, both in the letter that was published in the New York Times and in his interview on CNN back 6 years ago, for attacking the United States, for declaring jihad against the United States, was that we had Christians and women who were not wearing veils and Jews, Christians, Jews, and women's, you know, that is, you know, our soldiers on the Holy Land. Right. We had military bases in Saudi Arabia that hadn't been there before the Gulf War, and that continue to exist after the Gulf War. And he said, until you get these things out of here, I am going to attack you. I'm going to attack you in your own land, in your own nation.
Let me say something that might sound even more cynical.
Okay.
I believe that these Bush types, they don't care if there are terrorist attacks against us here, because I think what they see it as, that gives them more of an excuse to push through their war policies, that they won't mind if there are terrorist attacks here, because that makes it easier to do what they want to do, because that scares more people into going along with them.
It didn't work in Spain.
Not in Spain. People are much more educated politically. Here,
yeah.
People are very ignorant and ill-informed.
To some extent, I agree with you. I would say, and Patrick, I got to move along,
okay,
so I'm going to end
you.
This now. Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
But I would say, you know, number one, I grant you that they are willing to accept a certain number of casualties to achieve their goal. But I really think that when George Bush stood on that aircraft carrier and said, mission accomplished, and we've played the clip from it before here. Yeah, I mean, you listen to it. I really think that they thought that the mission was accomplished, that 90% of the work was done, that this was going to be a no-brainer, this was going to be easy. They just hadn't done their homework. They hadn't bothered to study the history of the region. They hadn't looked at what had happened to the British in the 1920s. Number one. So I think, number one, Patrick, I'll give you, they are willing to accept certain numbers of casualties. I think that the number of casualties that they're taking now exceeds what they're willing to accept. And it's a political equation for them. And I don't remember the second point. Anyway, I'm moving along here. Let me finish this. I just want to finish this thing from the Tehran Times. And we haven't gotten to John Ashcroft yet, which should be interesting. I mentioned the Iraqi Governing Council being quoted, a source close to the Iraqi Governing Council being quoted in the Tehran Times today, in yesterday's newspaper. And this being distributed all over the Middle East. In the meantime, this is a quote, in the meantime, many suspected containers disguised as fuel supplies have been moved about by some units of the U.S. Special Forces. The move has been carried out under heavy security measures. Also, there are unofficial reports that the containers held biological and bacterial toxins in liquid form. It is possible the news about the discovery of the WMDs would be announced later, end quote. And then he also said, this being the source close to the Iraqi Governing Council, he also said that such mixtures had been used by the Saddam regime in the 1990s. The source added that some provocative actions, such as the closure of Al-Hawzwa periodical, this being the Sheikh Sadr's newspaper by U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer, the secret meetings between his envoys with some extremist groups who have no relations with the Iraqi Governing Council, the sudden upsurge in violence in central and southern Iraq, a number of activities which has stoked up the wrath of the prominent Shia clerics, and finally the spate of kidnappings and the baseless charges against the Iranian charge d'affaires in Baghdad are providing the necessary smokescreen for the transportation of the WMD to their intended locations. I mean, you think, Patrick, you think you're into conspiracies. Here, the Iranians are saying that we're doing all this stuff, we're stirring all this stuff up, that we're intentionally provoking this right-wing shake so that we can quickly smuggle in and hide weapons of mass destruction so that we can find them just in time for the presidential election. The last paragraph of the article, he said they are quite aware that the White House, in cooperation with the CIA, has directly tasked the Defense Department to hide these weapons. Given the recent scandals to the effect that the U.S. president was privy to the 9/11 plot, they might try to immediately announce the discovery of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq in order to overshadow the scandals and prevent a further decline of Bush's public opinion rating as the election approaches. Could it be that that's... Nah. George Bush is not going to announce tonight in his press conference the discovery of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Nah. It couldn't be predicted by the Iranian Times. I'm sorry, I just couldn't. In Louis Freed's testimony this morning, just a couple things that I wanted to point out to you that I thought were really interesting. Number one, the cornerstone of Condi Rice's, it wasn't my fault, it wasn't Georgie's fault, the cornerstone of her argument was that the FBI and the CIA weren't talking to each other, that it was a systemic and structural problem. And I'm predicting that George Bush's press conference tonight is going to echo that they're basically going to blame it on the FBI, blame it on the CIA, and then in order to take the heat off the individuals in those agencies so nobody points the finger back at them, they're going to say, and by the way, we inherited, and, you know, the Clinton administration, it's all Bill Clinton's fault. It was this way during the Clinton administration, too. We had this dysfunctional system where the FBI and the CIA not only were not allowed by law to cooperate, because there is a law that says that the CIA can't do snooping inside the United States and that the FBI can't do spying outside the United States, but that they weren't talking to each other. And because they weren't talking to each other, these very specific memos didn't get passed along. And this, of course, is the point that Condi Rice made, and I'm predicting this is the point George Bush will make tonight. Well, Louis Freed, the good Republican, the head of the FBI under Bill Clinton, but he was and is a Republican, and had held you know, senior posts in Republican administrations prior to Bill Clinton coming into office. Louis Freed this morning directly contradicted that. He said that cooperation between the FBI and CIA, to use his word, was, quote, routine. Now, you know, who's lying? Louis Freed or Condi Rice? Did the FBI and CIA talk or did they not? Was it routine or was it not? Now, of course, he was talking about during the Clinton administration. Is it possible that they're actually both telling the truth? That when the Bush administration came in, they said, hey, you guys were talking during the Clinton administration. You were having those meetings every day about terrorism and all that. We don't think that's all that important. We've got to go after Cheech and Chong. Now, we got to cover up some naked breasts in the Justice Department. Got to go after online pornography. We've got to go after people who are using drugs, particularly medical marijuana. We got some serious problems here. Forget about this terrorism stuff. You guys can't talk to each other anymore. So maybe Condi Rice was telling the truth. Maybe they stopped talking to each other after George Bush came into office. The other big bombshell was the one that Richard Benveniste dropped about the president of Egypt. Stick around. I'll tell you about that one. 10 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
In some places, seagulls are giving people a lot of grief. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Several species of seagulls are common around the docks and piers of marinas and commercial waterfronts, but in many places, people now think these gulls have become too common. Around the Great Lakes, the ring-billed gull is now considered a nuisance. Scott Craven is a wildlife expert at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and he often speaks to groups that are dealing with growing numbers of these birds. Craven says large numbers of gulls give rise to numerous problems. They can be everything from a nuisance to a safety hazard around airports, landfills, and marinas. And when they live on top of buildings, their nests and droppings can jam the air intakes on the rooftops. Craven says ring-billed gulls are highly adaptable, and that's a big reason their numbers are growing. For example, they easily make their homes on the flat, gravelly rooftops of buildings because they're almost identical to the beaches where the bird normally builds its nests. Craven says the way people respond to gulls depends on location.
Some gulls along a lakeshore, that's an expectation. You expect to hear gulls screaming. You want to see a gull sitting on the piling at the lobster pound in Maine, but do you want 5,000 of them on the roof of your kid's school? Probably not.
Craven says problems with gulls crop up coast to coast, but which one is a problem depends on where you live. He says the ring-billed gull is the major nuisance around the Midwest.
In reality, the problem is pretty much restricted to ringbilled gulls, which are undergoing the biggest population explosion, and their behaviors and so forth can be quite different from the other species. So to the people involved in the control, knowing which species you're dealing with is absolutely essential. To the public, seagull's a seagull.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Three chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up about what they thought was true, and they thought their country gave that right to them and me and you. Now one night back in England, one of these babes brought up a beef about how she wasn't to be witched with her commander-in-chief. Some folks did not appreciate how she denounced their man. These patriots rolled up their sleeves and took matters in hand.
Let's meet all the Dixie chicks. We're too nice to use rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin, cowboy, that just goes to prove it can always happen again.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 3 minutes before the hour. Let's beat on the Dixie Chicks from Jim Tur's website, BlueCanyonProductions.com. Okay, here it is. Richard Benveniste pointed out this morning. He's as far as I can tell, of all the questioners, he's the one who's asking the hardest questions. He was part of the Whitewater investigations. He was also part of the Watergate investigations. This is a guy who knows how to ask questions. And he made the comment to Louis Free that the president of Egypt had warned the United States of suicide bombings, specifically. You know, the one of the things, you know, Condi Rice, we never could have imagined that they would use airplanes as weapons. And he got it on the record, essentially. The president of Egypt, what I thought was pretty interesting is that yesterday, the president of Egypt was down in Crawford, Texas, at the former pig farm that George Bush bought in 2000 and turned into his... I always thought a ranch had horses, and Bush is afraid of horses, so I have a hard time calling it a ranch. Maybe we should just call it the pig farm. Anyhow, the president of Egypt was there, and did he say it again? Did he say, "Hey, I told you so, I warned you, I let you guys know," but we didn't get to it. We didn't get to it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Attorney General John Ashcroft and two former FBI directors will face tough questions on Tuesday over why authorities failed to prevent the September 11th attacks and how 70 separate investigations did not uncover the hijacking plot. Ashcroft, former FBI Director Louis Freeh, and former acting FBI Director Thomas Pickard will testify before the National Commission examining the performance of law enforcement prior to the 2001 attacks that killed about 3,000. They are expected to face tough grilling, in part about an August 6, 2001 secret briefing in which the CIA told George W. Bush more than a month before the attacks that authorities knew Al-Qaeda members were in the United States. George W. Bush will hold his first formal press conference of the year on Tuesday to discuss the situation in Iraq, where U.S. forces are battling both Sunni and Shiite Muslim insurgents. After a week of the bloodiest fighting in Iraq since the ouster of Saddam Hussein, Bush was scheduled to appear in the East Room of the White House at 8:30 p.m. to take questions from the White House press corps in a live telecast. The White House said it has asked U.S. television networks for time to broadcast the news conference. The Republican Party's hope that its convention in New York would highlight a nation healed after the September 11th attacks could backfire as the White House comes under fire for its handling of the crisis and the war in Iraq, strategists said on Monday. George W. Bush's election effort is plagued with questions on whether his administration could have prevented the attacks, and holding his party's convention just minutes away from the World Trade Center, where nearly 3,000 people were killed, could make matters worse, they said. It was the wrong place to go from the beginning, veteran Republican political consultant Roger Stone said. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
An obese German cat, six times the normal weight, has gone on a hunger strike at a Berlin animal shelter after being taken from his owner, who had fed him 4 pounds of mince daily, Bild newspaper reported on Saturday. Mikesh, weighing nearly 41 pounds, was brought to the animal shelter on April 1st and was so overweight he could not take more than 4 steps without becoming exhausted. His elderly owner was at the same time taken to a nursing home. Shelter officials said 6-year-old Mikesh felt lost without his meat-feeding owner and stopped eating altogether when he was put on a diet to gradually lose weight. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Poor Carl. He's had a bad few weeks, and, well, Carl is cranky. Carl Rove, I'm talking about, George W.'s Machiavellian, Svengalian political operative who specializes in personal attack hatchet jobs on his clients' political enemies. Mudslinging is not enough for Rove. He tries to slime those he goes after. Nice is not in his vocabulary or character. But one of the people Carl has been trying to slime in recent days is Richard Clark, the counterterrorism expert who has blown the whistle on our toy soldier war president, and the slime is not sticking. In fact, it's Carl and his client in chief who have ended up with slime blowback all over them. So Rove was already in a foul funk when, on an otherwise serene Sunday afternoon in his swank Washington neighborhood, several hundred protesters suddenly showed up on his lawn. These were low-income folks from the Midwest who had come to their nation's capital to be heard on a bill that would provide educational opportunities for their children, a bill that Rove was keeping bottled up. They had requested a meeting, but he refused even to reply. So they came to him for a surprise Sunday session, chanting, "Carl, Carl, come on out. See what the Dream Act is all about." This threw Carl into a hissy fit. "Get off my property," shouted the public servant to the public. The crowd shouted back in unison, "Carl Rove ain't got no soul." They waved signs at him through his locked windows as he summoned the Secret Service to save him from his public. Finally, he agreed to meet with two of the protesters if all the rest left. They did, and Carl opened his garage door for a 2-minute meeting, during which he mostly screamed at them, closing it off with, "Don't ever dare to come back." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Yeah, Carl, what do those people think this is, a democracy?" If you want to meet with Carl, make a campaign contribution and hire a corporate lobbyist, like everyone else he knows.
While you can't see brilliant colors on the radio, you can use them in your business. That's why the Xerox WorkCenter M24 digital color copier printer is attractive to anyone who listens to the voice of reason. The lease price is a low $189 a month. You get brilliant Xerox color for less than 9 cents a page, plus the Xerox Total Satisfaction Guarantee. To get all the colors you can't see on the radio, do the most reasonable thing.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations, on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet from radiopower.org. Today, in this hour, we're pleased and honored to have Naomi Klein with us. She's the author of the international bestseller No Logo, taking aim at the brand bullies. It's been translated into 27 languages. The New York Times called No Logo a movement Bible. And it's won numerous awards. Her work has also appeared in publications from The Guardian to The New Statesman to Newsweek International, New York Times, The Village Voice, and Ms. Magazine. Naomi Klein, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Great to be here.
Well, thank you. You've just come back from Iraq. It must have been an amazing experience, and you've written a brilliant article about it titled "Fury Ignites Solidarity in Iraq." In it, you made the comment that Donald Rumsfeld claims that the resistance is just a few thugs, gangs, and terrorists, and that and you suggest that this is dangerous, wishful thinking. You go on to say the war against the occupation is now being fought out in the open by regular people defending their homes and neighborhoods, an Iraqi intifada. Is Rumsfeld just like, is he lying to us? Is he disconnected from reality? Is this a new thing? How do you account for the disparity between his saying, "Oh, it's just a few thugs," and you're going over there looking around and saying, the average people are getting involved in this?
Yeah, I don't think there's any way he couldn't know, because the significance of what's happened in the last, particularly the last week and a half, is, you know, maybe a few weeks ago, certainly a few months ago, you could make the claim that the armed resistance to the occupation, I think we need to make a distinction that there are other ways of resisting the occupation. There's criticism in the press, there's peaceful demonstrations demanding direct elections, and we've seen that. You know, in January there were 100,000 people on the streets of Baghdad, supporters of Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, asking for direct elections. There's a big peaceful movement against the interim constitution, which is seen as totally illegitimate because it's a product of a hand-picked appointed body, the Iraqi Governing Council, which was hand-picked by Paul Bremer. So there's lots of ways of opposing the occupation nonviolently, and I think until recently, you could make the claim that the armed resistance was operating in the shadows, that it was just a handful of people, Saddam loyalists, foreign terrorists. I don't think that that was ever completely true, but the real shift that has happened over the past 2 weeks is that the people who actually welcomed the occupation, the Shia communities who were most oppressed under Saddam, who welcomed U.S. forces, who were thrilled to see Saddam overthrown, who actually had tremendous faith and optimism that they meant it when they said that they were bringing democracy and liberation, it's those people that are now turning against the occupation. And they're turning against it because they are under direct attack. Their religious clerics are being threatened, are being arrested, are being killed. They are facing a military attack on civilian populations, air raids, missile attacks, tanks in playgrounds. And, you know, I called it an Iraqi intifada because it really looks like Gaza in parts of Baghdad right now.
Yeah. This is now we've got al-Sadr, right, who we're saying now, apparently the warrant was drawn up 4 months ago, is responsible for the murder of a previous cleric.
Yeah.
How is that playing there? Are most people thinking that this is just an excuse to get rid of him?
Yeah, I didn't meet anyone who believed that. It's just far too convenient that this warrant has been sitting there for 4 months, that no evidence has been brought forward to convince the population that this isn't just a straight attempt to take out a political opponent. I mean, you have to understand that Muqtada al-Sadr is the most vocal critic of the proposed political transition on June 30th. He's been a critic of the idea that what's planned is Iraqi sovereignty. He has said that, in fact, they're creating a puppet government, which is true. He has been very critical of the constitution that was drawn up, calling it anti-democratic. He's been calling, like Sistani, for direct elections. The difference between Muqtada al-Sadr and Sistani is that Sistani is much less militant in his tactics. They actually share the same political point of view in terms of calling for direct elections, in terms of criticizing the proposed interim government and the interim constitution. But while Sistani hasn't left his house, while he has focused on lobbying the United Nations, has focused on a diplomatic route, more and more people are becoming dissatisfied, precisely because the United Nations really hasn't responded to this attempts to reach out. They haven't supported the calls for direct elections. There's strong indications that they're going to ratify the interim constitution. So more and more people are disaffected and are looking to this younger, more radical cleric who is calling for street demonstrations, who is more militant in his confrontations with the occupation. And a couple of weeks ago, Paul Bremer just decided that he was going to take this guy out. And he launched a series of unprovoked attacks on al-Sadr, starting with the closing down of his newspaper, then the arresting of a very important deputy, then the surrounding of Muqtada al-Sadr's home. Then there were protests in Baghdad. This was on April 3rd, protesting this treatment of al-Sadr. And you have to understand that he comes from a family that was persecuted under Saddam Hussein. And the perception was that they were going to have religious freedom after Saddam was toppled, and they were seeing a repeat of the persecution, religious persecution that they suffered under Saddam Hussein. So they took to the streets in a peaceful demonstration the day Muqtada's home was surrounded, and the newly created Iraqi military opened fire on them and allegedly killed three people. And it was after that that the tensions really began to escalate, and there was more and more firing on peaceful demonstrations. And then it was only after that that al-Sadr called on his supporters. He said, our occupiers don't respect peaceful demonstrations. They don't respect freedom of the press, so we need to resist through other means. But it's very important to get the order straight, because they were not responding to an armed attack on them. They provoked the attack through violence,
now there is
another front of the war.
Yeah, the story that was played out very much here in the United States was that, I mean, you prefaced everything that you just said by saying this was an unprovoked attack, and the story that was on the network news here was that El Sadr's newspaper was a provocation, that his newspaper was calling for, that was, you know, it was spreading lies and innuendo or whatever, gossip, about that the Americans were up to this or up to that, or, you know, it might be a good thing if you killed them, or, you know.
No, they never said that. And it's interesting because if you read Bremer's order, ordering the closing down of the Alhazen newspaper, he never claims that there was direct incitement to violence, because there weren't. All he's able to claim is that the newspaper was publishing lies. And
but that's in his official document. I mean, nobody here is reading the official document. But if you look at the press releases, if you look at the news stories that were carried here in the United States, I'm assuming you saw some of these.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to see because I was in Baghdad. But yeah, the perception was, well, it's clear that there's been a huge spin offensive in the U.S. to try to make it seem as if Muqtada was calling for violence against the U.S. before there was this attack. But that's why I'm stressing so strongly that we have to get the order right.
Yeah.
That in fact the violence began with the coalition attacks on Al Sadr, the killing of peaceful demonstrators, and it was only after that that they concluded that peaceful means of resisting the occupation were no longer viable. And in terms of what they actually published in their newspaper, I also want to point out that these are views that you hear from absolutely everyone in Iraq. Every taxi driver will spin a conspiracy theory that the U.S. is somehow involved in fomenting civil war and even has some kind of involvement in terror attacks. They conclude this based on the fact that they failed to secure the borders. They actually have really made no attempt until just the past couple of weeks to prevent foreign terrorists from entering the country. Their theory is that the U.S. wanted civil unrest, that they wanted violence because that gave them the rationale to continue having their military bases after the handover, to provide a rationale for maintaining a security hold over Iraq even after so-called sovereignty has been passed over. Now, I'm not saying that these conspiracies are correct, but I am saying that these are beliefs that, in my research, are held by a majority of the Iraqi population.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of it has to do with confusion. A lot of it has to do with just a lack of information, a lack of transparency. But to single out this newspaper as the cause of it is totally absurd.
Right. We're talking with Naomi Klein, the author of No Logo and many other books and publications, who just returned from Iraq. And Naomi, do you see a competition going on between El Sadr and El Sistani? You know, it looks like
that oversimplifies it, because in many ways I think that they actually complement each other.
But if there's a democratic election and if there's a democratic election and the Shiites end up, you know, they're in the majority.
Yeah.
You look at Iran and Khomeini was pretty good at crushing his opponents within his own circles.
Well, yeah, but I think that the rivalry between Muqtada and Sistani has been a little bit oversimplified in the U.S. press, because the fact of the matter is that Sistani is Iranian, and he is not even able, he doesn't have Iraqi citizenship. He can't run for office. Plus, he's said that he has no interest in running for office. He is the senior religious cleric in the Shia community. That can't change. And Muqtada, at age 30, doesn't have the religious experience, that hasn't had the years of study behind him to supplant Muqtada to supplant Sistani as the spiritual leader. What he can do is run for office. And in fact, he has said, or his supporters have said, that although he doesn't want to be the next president of Iraq, if necessary, he would. So you could see a scenario where Sistani would continue to be the senior religious cleric, the senior religious figure in the Shia community, and Muqtada would run for office. And I think it's precisely that which Bremer is trying to prevent from happening. And listen, I think that if he got his way, if he got his wish, Iraq would look a lot like Iran. That said, all the polls that have been done in Iraq, and polls in Iraq are not entirely credible, but the polls that have been done have shown clearly that Iraqis do not want a theocracy, that they actually want a secular government. So if instead of, you know, refighting the war and starting new fronts of the war, the U.S. was actually concentrating on creating a democratic process that was equipped to genuinely represent the will of the Iraqi people instead of trying to force their own agenda on them, then there really isn't a danger that a Muqtada could take over and enforce his theocracy through direct elections.
Yeah,
that's not what the Iraqi people want.
It's more than a danger. this is a fire out of control, it seems. What we're talking with Naomi Klein, who just returned from Iraq. Naomi, stick around. We'll pick it up on the other side of this break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. If you'd like to be on with Naomi, the number is 1-866-889-8894. 20 minutes past the hour. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, I paid $15,000 for it. but this rivals a $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, we know.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Naomi Klein, who just got back from Iraq and wrote a remarkable piece about where did this first appear, Naomi? I don't have the original here in front of me.
It first appeared in the L.A. Times.
In the L.A. Times, okay. And it's been reprinted in The Guardian and other places, and I think that's the copy that I've got. A brilliant article titled, I lost the title. Where did it go?
I forget.
Yeah. I'll come across it here.
I think the title was Paul Bremer has really screwed up or something
like that. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a great one. Anyway, it's in the Naomi Klein in Baghdad is how it's titled in The Guardian. So anyway, it's 1-866-889-8894 is our number, and Nick in Grand Rapids, Michigan has a question for you. Hey Nick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good. I was just really interested about the Janet Reno testimony and how she ended up discrediting Richard Clark's book and regarding the Millennium plot and the border agent who averted that plot.
Yeah, it's I don't think that's quite on topic right at the moment, Nick. But why don't you call back a little later and we'll talk about that? Unless Naomi, you have some thoughts on that.
Afraid not.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd caught the testimony.
Hard to follow that from Baghdad.
Yeah, okay. Nick, thanks for the call. We'll get into that after the bottom of the hour here. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. Naomi, you're Canadian, right?
I am, guilty as charged.
How does Canada view this? How do Canadian? And I realize you can't, you know, lump
well,
a nation
one
together.
One thing in Iraq, you know, whenever we would meet people, they would ask us if we were Americans in not the friendliest way. Would we get that question, and we would tell them that we were Canadian, me and my photographer, and people were instantly a little bit kinder, but it was hard because apparently a lot of the American journalists are pretending they're Canadian, so people are starting to catch on to this particular. They see it as a bit of a scam now.
They can't pretend they're Australian because the accent's too different.
Yeah, but it's the other reason why it's hard to be a Western journalist right now in Iraq is that, as you know, there's a massive CIA operation, the largest CIA operation anywhere in the world in Iraq right now. And one thing that's become really clear to journalists in the field is that the CIA is they've got a lot of agents who are pretending to be journalists, particularly photojournalists. And what that means is that people are becoming increasingly suspicious. So people kept asking if we were CIA. It meant that they were less willing to tell their stories.
Are you sure that that's actually going on? I mean, the CIA traditionally has not done that, just for the very purpose that they didn't want to get blowback from the community of journalists. And I thought it used to be against the law.
They're definitely doing it, and you know, you can actually see them. You know, at demonstrations, there are people who are posing as photojournalists who clearly are not, because you can tell in terms of who they're taking photographs of and what they're not taking photographs of. And
this is
and we heard when we went to Sunni communities and tried to talk to people who were involved in the resistance, they said every time we talk to a journalist, we get arrested the next day. You're all CIA.
Yeah. The article, here it is, Fury Ignites Solidarity in Iraq, is the title of the article. Naomi Klein is with us. And, Naomi, we've got about 30 seconds left. What's your message to Americans? What should we be doing about this?
I think you should be holding George Bush to account for what is going on in Iraq in the same way that he's being held to account now, finally, or starting to be, for the intelligence failures on September 11th. The failure to provide security for the Iraqi people, the fact that that Iraq is such a less safe place now. They need to be held to account for that because they're the occupying power. They are the government in Iraq just as they're the government in the United States, and they can't get away with this.
Yeah. Okay, well said. Naomi Klein, the author of No Logo and this most recent piece, Fury Ignites Solidarity in Iraq. Naomi, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for the opportunity. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In an effort to cut costs by more than $900 million, chemical giant DuPont announced yesterday that it intends to cut 6% of its global workforce by the end of the year. Of the 59,000 DuPont employees around the globe, about 3,000 will be laid off, with two-thirds of the job cuts coming in the U.S. and Canada. The chemical giant also expects to lose 450 contractors and cut another 500 positions through attrition. DuPont employees were informed of the cuts Monday morning in an email. Once word of the firings got out, DuPont shares rose 66 cents on the New York Stock Exchange.
The ball may be rolling toward a strike of 100,000 service and support workers at SBC Communications. Last week, their union, the Communications Workers of America, gave the company 30 days' notice of a walkout, which is contingent on a strike ballot being voted on this month. The results of that are expected on April 29th, which just happens to be the day before SBC shareholders meet in Columbus, Ohio. After an extended weekend off, the company and union resumed bargaining today. Affordable health insurance and limits on outsourcing and offshoring of SBC jobs remain the two major points of contention.
Indian Tea Garden workers are in a nightmarish situation. More than 800 workers have died of starvation, malnutrition, and disease in the abandoned tea gardens of North Bengal, according to the Indian People's Tribunal on Human Rights and the Environment. The tea plantations closed suddenly and without notice as managers cut off electricity and water to the homes of laborers, who are reportedly surviving on wild roots and rats. At least 25 tea gardens have closed in the past 3 years, leaving 1 million workers unemployed. There are 160 gardens in North Bengal, and many more may soon close due to a crash in global market prices.
A new report from the Palestinian Authority says unemployment in the Gaza Strip and West Bank has topped the 50% mark, and 8 out of 10 Palestinians in the occupied territories live below the poverty line. On average, Palestinians who are working manage just $2 a day in compensation. Construction of an Israeli wall around the Palestinian territories is blamed for many being thrown out of work, no longer able to freely travel to previous jobs in Israel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's official, a job in the U.S. Armed Services is the most hazardous American profession. More than 675 service members have died in Iraq since the beginning of President Bush's invasion last year, 74 since April 1st alone. Meanwhile, the toll of the wounded keeps on piling up. According to United Press International, the military made more than 18,000 medical evacuations in the first year of fighting.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 26 minutes before the hour. John O'Neill was a remarkable man, and I believe it was Richard Vincinetti, was his name, the questioner on the panel, whose name I can never pronounce, who brought his name up several times this morning in his questioning of Louis Free. And Louis Free made some positive comments about it. I don't know if you remember that there was actually a song, Ballad of John O'Neill, in fact, about him that came out some time ago, and it has some really poignant moments about it. John O'Neill, of course, was the director of counterterrorism for the FBI's New York office. He was, according to many people who knew him, obsessed with Osama bin Laden. How dare he? Obsessed with Osama bin Laden and pursuing this guy. He was actually one of the world's leading experts on Osama bin Laden. And his story is just quite remarkable. I want to share a little bit of that with you. I have a little clip from the song here about it. First, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Margaret in Marion, Illinois is on the line. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello. I'd like to mention the fact that when what we saw on TV the other was not peaceful demonstrations, and when they bombed those Americans who were over there trying to rebuild their country, I can't see anything but good reason for our Marines to go in there and clean up the whole mess.
Yeah, you're responding to Naomi Klein. Well, of course,
a completely wrong impression that she is giving. Besides, their Quran tells them that everybody who believes in something else, a different God, Christians, whatever, is an infidel, and they won't rest until the Jews are put in the middle of the ocean. And this is the real truth.
You know, Margaret, first of all, two things here you've said.
That's the real truth.
Yeah, let me deal with the Quran first. The Quran doesn't say that.
But it does.
Any more or less than the Christian Bible says the people who don't believe in Jesus are doomed.
Well, nevertheless, I don't know that we should have gone over there. I think we could develop our own oil resources. There's all kinds of...
Yeah.
We are the most inventive nation on earth, and yet all of a sudden now we can't be anymore.
I agree. And Margaret,
I'll agree with you on some things, and some things that I know are not true.
Well, I appreciate that. And here's the point, Margaret, that Naomi Klein was making. She wasn't saying that the demonstrations where they killed this guy, these four guys and stuff, were peaceful. What she was saying was that after they shut down Sauder's newspaper, 100,000 people came out into the streets to peacefully demonstrate. And that not American forces, but the Iraqi army that we had put together fired into that crowd and killed three people. And that's what started this whole thing that has spiraled out of control.
And many of those Iraqi people that we've trained have led our guys into ambushes, too.
Sure. But I think the point, Margaret, is twofold. One, you know, we wouldn't have this mess if we weren't there in the first place, and we got lied into this thing, and we never did have the national debate we should have had about what do we really need to have. Do we really need to take a country in the Middle East and have it as our own? And you know, should we be spending an amount of money equal to, you know, over $1 million college, 4-year college scholarships, or over $1 million teacher salaries for a year, to rebuild Iraq? So number one, we never had that debate. And number two, what Naomi Klein was saying, from having read her article, and I would recommend that you actually read her article, by the way, and I'm sure you can find it on commondreams.org, that there are, and there is a strong movement within Iraq of people who want to peacefully resist the United States occupation, but basically the Iraqi people are starting to say, hey, enough, it's our country, time for you guys to go, as they said in the 1920s. And that our response has been the heavy hand, and their response back to that is, okay, you want violence, we'll show you violence. We've been doing that for centuries.
Yes, it's been going on since time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the cradle of civilization. You know, the story of Gilgamesh, the oldest known story in civilization, written 4,000 years before the Old Testament of the Bible was written. The Epic of Gilgamesh was about the city of Ur and Uruk, the city that Gilgamesh built in what is now called Iraq. You know, it literally is the cradle of modern civilization. And it's an incredibly violent story, right? All the way from the beginning. So, anyway, Margaret, thanks for the call.
Okay.
I appreciate hearing from you, and I appreciate you're keeping me on my toes here and stirring things up. 22 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman here with you. U.S. Attorney Mary Jo White said this of John O'Neill. She said he went at it comprehensively. This was his attempts to ferret out Osama bin Laden. He went about it comprehensively, yielding things from people in London or people in Yemen we never otherwise would have gotten. Now, what happened was, when the USS Cole was bombed, he went over to Yemen. And he headed up the crew, the FBI crew that was looking into this. Keep in mind, this is the world's leading expert on Osama bin Laden. And the problem he had when he was over there, this was, you know, in the port of Aden, right off the coast of Yemen, 17 Americans were killed, 35 were injured. He was the head of the FBI team. He had over 100 agents there. And he was blocked in his efforts to complete this investigation by U.S. Ambassador to Yemen, Barbara Bodine. Yes, she was a Clinton administration appointee. Under Reagan, she had served as the deputy principal officer in Baghdad. Under Bush Sr., she had served as chief deputy of mission in Kuwait, and she was there in Kuwait during the Gulf War. Previously to that, she had worked for Bob Dole, and, perhaps most bizarre, she had worked for Henry Kissinger. Well, somehow Bill Clinton made this woman the ambassador to Yemen, and when John O'Neill went over there and did his investigation, she wouldn't let his agents wear guns. She would not. She was blocking this investigation because she said that it would create tension with Yemen if you investigate what happened. Well, it slowed him down, but he didn't stop him, and he came to the conclusion that Al Qaeda was behind this. He came back to the United States. Clinton lost the election, or Gore. You know, however you want to say that. You know, the Supreme Court appointed George Bush, and the Bush administration came in, and immediately John O'Neill was essentially unwelcome, persona non gratis, in the FBI. I mean, it was just, you know, very straightforward. In February of 2001, Bush orders the Taliban government office in the United States closed. The Taliban responds by saying they might be willing to turn over bin Laden. Bush ignores the offer. In March of 2001, the daughter of CIA Director Richard Helms, Lila Helms, brings one of Mullah Omar's advisors, Saeed Hashimi, to Washington. He meets with the CIA. At one point, she, the daughter of Helms, former CIA director, says that the Taliban would be willing to hold bin Laden in one location long enough that we can kill him. The Bush administration says, nah, we don't want to do this. Yeah, I think that it's becoming increasingly clear that the Bush administration had an aversion to doing anything against anybody whose last name was bin Laden. Since Halliburton, or since Harkin Oil Company, Bush had been bailed out in Harkin Oil with bin Laden money. And Bush's father was, at this point in time, an employee of the Carlyle Group, which was in part started with bin Laden money and business partners with the senior bin Laden. In early May, Louis Free is basically forced out of the FBI. There's this extensive right-wing smear campaign launched against him. In May, Bush gives the Taliban $43 million to, quote, sweeten the pot. This was ostensibly to stop them from growing opium. In June, now Louis Free is gone, and the Bush administration orders that the FBI investigation that John O'Neill has been doing in Yemen should come to a stop, and pulls out all of our agents from Yemen. We don't want no more investigation. No. In June, right after this has happened, O'Neill meets with he goes to Paris and he meets with Jean-Charles Brissard, a French intelligence expert, and tells Brissard that he is just absolutely flat out freaked out, frustrated by the Bush administration's unwillingness to pursue Osama bin Laden. Says he thinks that the key to the whole thing is Saudi Arabia, and that the Bush administration won't let him pursue it, and he's going to quit. Brissard writes a book about this called Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth, and he dedicates the book to John O'Neill. This is John O'Neill still alive. Actually, the book was published after he died, but it was written when he was still alive. In July, Francis Vendrell and Tom Simmons, the former ambassador to Pakistan, meet with the Taliban in Berlin on the Bush administration's behalf. They have a deal that they want to make. Let us run a pipeline across Afghanistan to bring gas from the Caspian Sea down to the Gulf where we can ship it to the United States. The Taliban says no. Tom Simmons, on the behalf of George Bush, says, well, it depends on whose story you take. Well, anyhow, he threatens military action. The Taliban just storms out of the meeting. In July, the Bush administration directs the FBI to back off on their Osama bin Laden investigation. On July 6th, the FBI goes back to Yemen to do some follow-up work, but O'Neill is told he can't go. He's too obsessed with bin Laden. On July 10th, 4 days later, an FBI agent named Kenneth Williams, based in Phoenix, this is the Phoenix memo that they were talking about this morning, sends a memo to John O'Neill, that Williams suspected an Osama bin Laden hijacker was in training and taking flight lessons at a local flight school. It gets to O'Neill, and O'Neill forwards it into the bureaucracy during the Bush administration, and that memo vanishes. Nobody has any idea today where it went or who saw it. 2 days later, Osama bin Laden shows up in Dubai, our ally, to be treated for his kidney disease. And he's actually visited by a CIA agent by the name of Larry Mitchell. Nobody has any idea what happened in that meeting, but he did get his treatment. He was there for a week and he left. On August 2nd, Christina Rocha, who at the State Department under Colin Powell was the director of Asian Affairs, meets with the ambassador in Islamabad, the ambassador from the Taliban. And according to Brissard's book, her message from George Bush was, quote, "Either you accept our offer of a carpet of gold or we bury you under a carpet of bombs," end quote. The offer being that UNICAL wants to build a pipeline across Afghanistan. Hey, we already gave you $43 million. Let us build this pipeline. The offer is refused. 4 days later, George Bush gets his memo, August 6th, memo titled, "Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S., and he goes and plays golf. August 19th, the number two guy in command at the FBI, Tom Picard, now we're up to August, right, tells O'Neill that he can kiss goodbye any chance of a promotion. It's clear he's going to be pushed out. So he quits late August. In September, he takes a new job, director of security for the World Trade Center. His first day at work, September 11th. Here's the ballad.
John followed bin Laden.
The Ballad of John O'Neill.
Where on USS Cole they killed 17 men.
This is about
they. He was in the Big Apple on that fateful day, and the gash was ripped deep in our own nation's soul. In the memo from Phoenix, they never told why they were suspicious men burning
That was the Phoenix memo, of course.
Strangely, they didn't care to learn how to land. John O'Neill got the message, so he was canned.
And he was canned in part over this Phoenix memo.
He left the bureau. They had turned away from tracking down terrorists and locking them away. They became once again, like in J. Edgar's day, political tools, but war cops all around. On September 11, he drove Valerie.
Here it is.
In the old Buick, the Sabre, to the Fashion Week meet. Then on to his first day as security boss at the World Trade Center, the day it was lost.
At the World Trade Center, the day it was lost. The Ballad of John O'Neill. And it's and this story, it's kind of emblematic. It's the entire thing. I mean, the whole thing of George Bush coming into office and saying, you know, we really, you know, this Bin Laden family, we've been picking on them through the Clinton administration, and we really need to stop picking on them. And people like John O'Neill, who are obsessed, and Richard Clark, who are obsessed with Osama Bin Laden, you know, these guys aren't all that bad. They're business partners of mine. They helped me make me a millionaire. So, you know, back off. Let's see what he says tonight in his press conference. It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Sea turtles follow some regular routes offshore, but they run into a lot of dangerous traffic. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Food for marine fish and turtles is churned up from the ocean depths at some spots where great masses of warm water and cold water collide. These boundary waters are ocean highways for sea turtles that travel between places where they feed and places where they lay their eggs. Marine biologists want to do more to protect these turtles on their travels. They say the turtles often run into trouble because the places where they swim also attract a lot of fish and commercial fishing operations. Larry Crowder is a marine ecologist at Duke University, and he's studied sea turtles and their behavior at sea. He says the fish and turtles end up in the same places because so much food is churned up in these areas where warm water and cool water meet.
The turtles and sharks and the swordfish and the tunas all show up at these locations because they're attractive places to eat. And as a result, because they're aggregated there, the fishermen find them to be attractive places to fish.
Crowder says loggerhead turtles and leatherback turtles are often caught accidentally on hooks intended for fish. According to some estimates, more than 200,000 loggerheads and 60,000 leatherbacks are caught each year, and many of them die. Biologists say these turtles are also losing their coastal nesting habitats, and the combination of pressures could drive them to extinction in the next 50 years. Crowder says the accidental catch of these sea turtles could be reduced if fishing was limited along these ocean pathways. But he says that could be challenging. These pathways shift with the seasons, and that makes it hard to predict where the turtles will be at any given time. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Taking away the moments that make up a dull day. Return waste the hours in an offhand way.
And welcome back. Quite a discussion in our chat room here. Shame on you, Tom. It's great. I love it. If you haven't dropped in, go to TomHartman.com and just click on the chat room. It takes you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Push the chat button. It'll drop you into the chat room. If you have an AOL or CompuServe screen name, just use that and your password. It'll get you in. If not, you can sign up for one. It's free. They just ask for an email address so that they can stop spammers and whatnot. Anyhow, line one, Bert in Virginia Beach is on the line, 1-866-889-8894. What's up, Bert?
I was just listening to your report on the Ballad of John O'Neill.
Yes.
Did Mr. O'Neill survive the attack?
No. He got out of one building after the first attack. I think it was building one. And he went into the other building in order to try and help rescue people, and he died. He never came out. He got out successfully, and then he went back in.
So he was in the first building that was struck.
I don't remember which building fell first and which building was, you know, which building he was in, but I know that he was in one building, and he got out successfully. He went into the other building and he died in that building.
And he really is someone you would consider to be a bin Laden expert.
Well, that's how Louis Free described him this morning in his testimony under oath before the commission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, he was probably the leading bin Laden obsessed individual in the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and he was the head of counterterrorism for the FBI. He was absolute. I mean, he was totally into it. You know, and that was of course something that got him great praise and a lot of help and a lot of assistance in the Clinton administration. And once Bush came along, suddenly, we don't want to hear about that.
Mm. And he didn't use his experience to realize what the nature of the threat was and
help everybody get out as quickly as possible. Well, he actually did. He went to France and he talked with this guy, Prezard, and said, you know, America's going to be hit. And they wrote a book about it, the Hidden Warnings, I believe is the title of the book. So he tried his best to get the word out, but the guy had to make a living. fighting. So he took a job as head of security for the World Trade Center.
Well, I guess that's what I meant when he was at the World Trade Center in the days that it occurred.
Yeah, but there,
you know, some of the things that you hear conversations going on was that some people actually went back into the building, and you would have thought that security at World Trade would have been saying, okay, everybody, you need to get out.
You would think so. I gotta end it there, Bert. I'm sorry. It's the end of the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to answer no.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Attorney General John Ashcroft and two former FBI directors will face tough questions on Tuesday over why authorities failed to prevent the September 11th attacks and how 70 separate investigations did not uncover the hijacking plot. Ashcroft, former FBI Director Louis Freeh, and former acting FBI Director Thomas Pickard will testify before the National Commission examining the performance of law enforcement prior to the 2001 attacks that killed about 3,000. They are expected to face tough grilling, in part about an August 6, 2001 secret briefing in which the CIA told George W. Bush, more than a month before the attacks, that authorities knew Al-Qaeda members were in the United States. George W. Bush will hold his first formal press conference of the year on Tuesday to discuss the situation in Iraq, where U.S. forces are battling both Sunni and Shiite Muslim insurgents. After a week of the bloodiest fighting in Iraq since the ouster of Saddam Hussein, Bush was scheduled to appear in the East Room of the White House at 8:30 p.m. to take questions from the White House press corps in a live telecast. The White House said it has asked U.S. television networks for time to broadcast the news conference. The Republican Party's hope that its convention in New York would highlight a nation healed after the September 11th attacks could backfire as the White House comes under fire for its handling of the crisis and the war in Iraq, strategists said on Monday. George W. Bush's election effort is plagued with questions on whether his administration could have prevented the attacks, and holding his party's convention just minutes away from the World Trade Center, where nearly 3,000 people were killed, could make matters worse, they said. It was the wrong place to go from the beginning, veteran Republican political consultant Roger Stone said. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
An obese German cat, six times the normal weight, has gone on a hunger strike at a Berlin animal shelter after being taken from his owner, who had fed him 4 pounds of mince daily, Bild newspaper reported on Saturday. Mikesh, weighing nearly 41 pounds, was brought to the animal shelter on April 1st and was so overweight he could not take more than four steps without becoming exhausted. His elderly owner was at the same time taken to a nursing home. Shelter officials said six-year-old Mikesh felt lost without his meat-feeding owner and stopped eating altogether when he was put on a diet to gradually lose weight. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The only thing madder than mad cow disease is our government's mad cow policies. Take the case of Creekstone Farms Premium Beef, a small enterprising company in Kansas that produces top quality beef. To assure both U.S. and foreign buyers that its product is free of mad cow disease, Creekstone said that it would exceed USDA's minimal testing standards and pay to have every single one of its cows privately tested. Great! Who could be against more testing and such innovative entrepreneurship? The U.S. Department of Agriculture, for one. The big beef lobbyists, for two. In another case of Bushite bourgeois, USDA notified Creekstone that it does not allow private testing, even by certified labs. This from an administration that's privatizing everything from its wars to your water supply. Why? The official rationale is that only the government can assure food safety. But how can testing 100% of cows be less safe than USDA's program that inspects less than 1%? The real reason for USDA's intransigence is that the big beef companies don't want to do 100% testing themselves, and they want no competition from anyone who does. They say that Creekstone's testing would, quote, mislead us consumers, for we might think that 100% testing produces a safer product. Aside from the fact that more testing does assure more safety, Creekstone is not even making such a claim. It's only claiming that, indeed, it tests 100% of its cows. Then it's up to us consumers to decide in the marketplace which beef we prefer. But the Bushites and the big beef lobbyists refuse to allow such consumer choice, declaring that Creekstone cannot advertise that every ounce of its beef is fully tested. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a pile of BS! To help bring sanity to Washington's mad cow policies, call the USDA's comment office, 202-720-5627.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And that's me, Tom Hartman, here with you. On the third hour, in the third hour of our program today, I have in my hands here the memo that was written 2 months before the 9/11 attacks. FBI agent Kenneth Williams. This is a memo that he sent to John O'Neill, among others. And it has secret up at the top. It's been marked. This has been declassified. It's been, fairly well redacted, big chunks of it blacked out, names of people and sources and things. But let me just share a few sentences with you. This from April. I'm sorry, this is from July 20th, 2001. The purpose of this communication is to advise the Bureau and New York. As I said, this went to John O'Neill in New York. And he tried as hard as he could to kick it up the chain. To advise the Bureau and New York of the possibility of a coordinated effort by Osama bin Laden to send students to the United States to attend civil aviation universities and colleges. Why has nobody read this out loud in the hearings? Why? Phoenix has observed an inordinate number of individuals of investigative interest who are attending or who have attended civil aviation universities and colleges in the state of Arizona. The inordinate number of these individuals attending these types of schools and fatwas, blanked out, gives reason to believe that a coordinated effort is underway to establish a cadre of individuals who will one day be working in the civil aviation community around the world. These individuals will be in a position in the future to conduct terror activity against civil aviation targets. I am reading to you from an FBI memo, July 10th, 2001, from the Phoenix field office, a fellow by the name of Williams, an agent by the name of Williams, Kenneth Williams, that was sent to John O'Neill in New York, the FBI office in New York, and John O'Neill tried his very hardest to get to John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft will be testifying any minute now as I'm speaking. I'm assuming Louise is recording it. We'll have pieces of it for you tomorrow. But it's going to be real interesting if this gets mentioned. Here he continues. Phoenix believes that the FBI should accumulate a listing of civil aviation universities and colleges around the country. FBI field offices with these types of schools in their area should establish appropriate liaison. FBI headquarters should discuss this matter with other elements of the U.S. intelligence community and task the community for any information that supports Phoenix's suspicions. We're laying it out for you, folks. We've seen it here in Phoenix. These guys are coming in from these Middle Eastern countries. In fact, he lists the countries. They're coming in from Kenya, Pakistan, the United Arab Emirates, India, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan. And they want to learn how to fly airplanes, commercial jetliners, without learning how to land them or take them off. And they don't know how to fly small planes. Now, I can tell you that's no small task. I am a pilot. I'm a licensed pilot. And, yeah, I got my license back in 1972. I learned how to fly small planes. That's all I can fly is a small plane. I can fly a high-performance, variable-pitch prop with, retractable landing gear. But that's it. I'm not even certified for dual engine. And it took a year, and it took a lot of time, and it was a big effort. And you've got to have hundreds of hours of flight time in before you can. Well, you've got to have, I think, as I recall, it's either 40 or 60 hours to qualify for your private pilot's license. 20 hours of solo flight, as I recall, and that of course is 30-year-old information. It may have changed since then, but anyhow, it wasn't easy. And then, in order to get instrument rated, you got to go a couple hundred more hours of actual flying time. And then to get multi-engine rated, you got to go a couple hundred more hours. And then you apply for a license for commercial flight, and you got to put in another few hundred hours or 1,000 hours. I forget how many it is. It's really quite substantial. I mean, these guys who are flying these commuter airlines around the country, Michael Moore pointed out that the pilots for the American Airlines commuter were making about the same as people at Taco Bell. They do that, you know, in the hopes that something better will come along, but they have committed major years of their life to learning this, which I suppose, you know, should reassure those of us who get on airplanes from time to time. But in any case, the point is that you don't just walk in off the street to a flight school and say, "Hi, I'd like to learn how to fly a 767. Well, do you know how to fly a Cessna 150 or a 172? No, I'm sorry, I don't know that. Do you have a pilot's license? No, I don't. You ever flown multi-engine? No, I don't. You know, you ever flown instrument flight rules, IFR? No, I haven't done that. Well, why do you want to learn to fly a 767? Well, I just do. And I'll pay you in cash. And correctly, the guys at these flight schools, they called the FBI. In Arizona, they called up Kenneth Williams, and they said, "Hey, there's something wrong here. We got a problem. We got, I mean, just the Arizona office noticed that they had people from the United Arab Emirates, Pakistan, Kenya, India, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia wanting to learn how to fly 767s. I'll continue reading from the memo. I'm repeating a sentence or two here, but just get this. I mean, this is what made John O'Neill crazy. Phoenix believes that the FBI should accumulate, Phoenix being the Phoenix field office of the FBI, that the FBI should accumulate a listing of civil aviation universities and colleges around the country. Gee, that would be a big challenge. Look in the yellow pages. Okay, they could do that. FBI knows how to do that. This being 2001, actually, there was the Internet. They could go to the online yellow pages. Give me flight school. Here it is. Okay. So the Phoenix office of the FBI says, please do this. Get together a list of flight schools around the country. Okay, then what? FBI field offices with these types of schools in their area should establish appropriate liaison. This is fancy FBI talk for go meet these people. Will you be my liaison? Are you? Yes. Go talk to the flight schools. And what should they do with this liaison? Well, here it is. FBI headquarters should discuss this matter with other elements of the U.S. intelligence community. And keep in mind, this memo came as George Bush was president and as Osama bin Laden was preparing to hit us on 9/11. But it was in July, 3 months before the attacks. FBI headquarters should discuss this matter with other elements of the U.S. intelligence community and task the community for any information that supports Phoenix's suspicions, our suspicions. Now, Condi Rice said last week, "I'm sorry, the FBI and the CIA, they weren't talking. We've got this structural problem." And I'll bet you just about anything George Bush tonight is going to use that same excuse.
"Well, you see, we've got this structural problem. We put together the Bureau of Homeland Security, and we passed the Patriot Act, and these are the things that you do if you really want to go on a war footing." Louis Free made that comment this morning. None of us were on a war footing.
I don't think a war footing would have stopped this thing. Following up on this memo would have. But Louis Free, you know, he's a good Republican. He's even though he worked for the Clinton administration, he's doing his best. FBI headquarters, the memo continues, should consider seeking the necessary authority to obtain visa information from the U.S. Department of State on individuals obtaining visas to attend these types of schools, and notify the appropriate FBI field office when these individuals are scheduled to arrive in their area of responsibility. Now you tell me, if the FBI had gone around to the various flight schools, if they had plugged flight schools into Google, and they had called them, they could have done that. You don't even need an FBI agent for this. They could have done this with a secretary. They could have done this with an intern. May I speak to the local community college? Yes, we have an internship program here at the FBI, and it only pays $2 an hour, but you do get good experience. We need somebody who can sit at the telephone for about a day and a half and call all the flight schools in America and ask them if they've got any people from Middle Eastern countries who are trying to learn how to fly airplanes, commercial airplanes, but have no experience flying any other kind of aircraft and don't have pilot's licenses. You got anybody there who can do that for $2 an hour? Oh, you've got people who do it for free? Just for the experience of resumes on the FBI? Yeah, work for the FBI. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, send them over. Send them over. Yes, we'll give them a phone. We'll sit them in the corner. We'll let them have Google. Yeah, sure. Or we got a room full of Yellow Pages left over from the 70s, but yes.
That's all it would have taken. That's all it would have taken. And John O'Neill gets his memo, and he's running around. Richard Clark says he's running around with, you know, not specifically by John O'Neill, but of the people who are getting these kind of memos, they're running around with his hair on fire. Terrible things are going to happen. What are these guys doing training to fly 767s when they don't know how to fly a Cessna? For those of you not familiar with aviation, Cessnas are the Cessna 150 is a little two-person airplane. It'll take off at 60 miles an hour. You point that thing into a strong wind, and it'll actually lift off the ground. You don't even have to turn the engine on. The only slower thing is the old J3, the Cub, the Piper Cub. You can take those things off in a 40-mile-an-hour wind. And there's all these stories. My old flight instructor, he told me about a J3 one time. He said they'd wait until the wind got up to 40 miles an hour. You know, really bad windy day. They'd haul that J3 out of the hangar, hook a big cord up to the front of it, point it into the wind, and just sit in it as it rose up into the sky. What great fun! Those were real pilots. But why wasn't the FBI saying, hey, there's some people who are not real pilots wanting to know how to fly 767s? Well, John O'Neill wanted to know. Kenneth Williams wanted to know. Dick Clark wanted to know. George Bush had no interest in knowing. And apparently neither did John Ashcroft. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
That grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Hi, this is Emily Richards for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. One person's negligence shattered my life in a single instant. You see, my little sister Annie was killed by a drunk driver. Please, remember those you love. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the...
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you, 25 minutes past the hour. George Bush sees the need for reorganizing U.S. intelligence. What's all that about? I'll tell you in just a minute. First, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. And David, listening in Florence, Italy, is on the line. Dave, I assume you're listening on radiopower.org.
Yes, I am.
Great. It's a wonderful website, listener-supported. I encourage you to press the donate button. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Hi. Tom, I got a question.
Sure.
From over here, I've got a friend of mine that works with U.S. Air Force intelligence, and she actually brought up over a year ago that, some of the pilots that were in, some of the pilots that flew the planes and crashed them into the buildings, they were actually in the jump seat before the planes took off. Has this ever been reported at all?
I've seen that among many other claims, you know, that the planes were remotely controlled, that there were pods underneath them. There's this whole body of conspiracy stuff, and you know, who knows what's right or wrong. I'm not here to say that it's all nonsense just because it's not coming out of the mainstream media, but
yeah.
But by and large, no, I think the consensus is that these guys came up with you know, these box cutters, and they slashed a few throats and put the fear of God into the flight attendants and got into the cockpits and killed the pilots and took over.
Right, because, I mean, if you take a look, I mean, I find it very difficult to believe. I mean, I've flown Cessnas myself, and I have friends that fly, and they would let me fly in the air when we would go up and, well, I have to say, play around a little bit. And it's difficult. You know, you take a plane and you bank the plane, and you start to lose altitude, and you have to know how to fly the plane to keep altitude. And the second plane that hit the second tower, if you take a look at it, it's actually flying, and it's banking and turning. And it didn't miss it. It didn't clip it. It didn't, I mean, it hit it pretty much full on, which means that, you know, to keep a plane at low speed and at that altitude, at the right altitude to hit the tower, means that you really have to know what you were doing.
Well,
I find it very difficult to,
yes and no,
to believe,
David,
that you would learn that flying Cessnas or, you know, flight simulators.
Yeah, I've flown a 727 simulator, and of course it's not a 727, but I'll tell you, it's not that much more difficult than flying a Cessna 150. In fact, in many ways, it's a lot easier. It's just everything responds a little more slowly. And those guys were going low and slow. I mean, they were probably going less than 200 knots. And, it's interesting. I've never looked at a picture closely to see if they had their flaps down. But
But, you know, I don't think that it would have been, frankly, that difficult. You know, speaking as a pilot, it's not that hard to run right into something.
All right, thanks a lot.
David, hey, over there in Italy, how are the Italians taking all this? What's the Italian take on America's involvement in Iraq?
Well, the Italians are kind of a funny breed. They're different from other European countries. Generally, the EU countries, I mean, we've really lost a lot of, our reputation is kind of down the tubes.
Yeah, well, we've got Berlusconi on our side over there.
Yeah, well, we built it up after the Second World War, and, mistakes here and there, but that's, we're a young country. But, basically, we've always supported NATO and the United Nations. And
we being Italy.
Pardon me?
We being Italy?
No, we being America.
Oh, okay, thanks.
America.
Yeah.
And everything that's happened in the last, since this administration, we just look more like destroyers than helpers.
To the Italians.
And the United States garnished a lot of support after 9/11. Everyone felt connected. Everyone felt like a New Yorker, like an American.
Yeah.
Everyone was touched, and that was very quickly washed away.
By
the White House.
By George Bush and his actions.
The policies that we've changed and the way we've managed the United Nations and NATO and what we've done in Iraq.
Yeah, okay. David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Great to know that you're hearing our signal over there in Florence, Italy. I appreciate
it. Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, 1-866-889-8894. Preston in Denver. Hang on. We'll pick up your call on the other side of the break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes after the hour.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving. Yeah, we love it when the music does the talking.
And the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In an effort to cut costs by more than $900 million, chemical giant DuPont announced yesterday that it intends to cut 6% of its global workforce by the end of the year. Of the 59,000 DuPont employees around the globe, about 3,000 will be laid off, with two-thirds of the job cuts coming in the U.S. and Canada. The chemical giant also expects to lose 450 contractors and cut another 500 positions through attrition. DuPont employees were informed of the cuts Monday morning in an email. Once word of the firings got out, DuPont shares rose 66 cents on the New York Stock Exchange.
The ball may be rolling toward a strike of 100,000 service and support workers at SBC Communications. Last week, their union, the Communications Workers of America, gave the company 30 days' notice of a walkout, which is contingent on a strike ballot being voted on this month. The results of that are expected on April 29th, which just happens to be the day before SBC shareholders meet in Columbus, Ohio. After an extended weekend off, the company and union resumed bargaining today. Affordable health insurance and limits on outsourcing and offshoring of SBC jobs remain the two major points of contention.
Indian Tea Garden workers are in a nightmarish situation. More than 800 workers have died of starvation, malnutrition, and disease in the abandoned tea gardens of North Bengal, according to the Indian People's Tribunal on Human Rights and the Environment. The tea plantations closed suddenly and without notice as managers cut off electricity and water to the homes of laborers, who are reportedly surviving on wild roots and rats. At least 25 tea gardens have closed in the past 3 years, leaving 1 million workers unemployed. There are 160 gardens in North Bengal, and many more may soon close due to a crash in global market prices.
A new report from the Palestinian Authority says unemployment in the Gaza Strip and West Bank has topped the 50% mark, and 8 out of 10 Palestinians in the occupied territories live below the poverty line. On average, Palestinians who are working manage just $2 a day in compensation. Construction of an Israeli wall around the Palestinian territories is blamed for many being thrown out of work, no longer able to freely travel to previous jobs in Israel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's official, a job in the U.S. Armed Services is the most hazardous American profession. More than 675 service members have died in Iraq since the beginning of President Bush's invasion last year, 74 since April 1st alone. Meanwhile, the toll of the wounded keeps on piling up. According to United Press International, the military made more than 18,000 medical evacuations in the first year of fighting.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And which is George Bush?
It all comes together, but sometimes you're a fool in love.
Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. John Kerry's, 4 points ahead in the polls? If you include Ralph Nader, 7 points without him, or 8, something like that? Is he going to lose it all? We'll see. We'll see. Don't ever underestimate the power of $170 million, more than has ever been spent by any politician in the history of the world. And George Bush has, and the friendship of all these special interests, all these big corporations, particularly big media corporations. You know, this thing, Clear Channel bouncing Howard Stern off the air in Florida. Yes, it's a swing state. It's a corporation with Republican affiliations, and Howard Stern starts bashing George Bush. And what do? They want to prosecute him for something he said 2 years ago. That's a whole other topic. We'll get into that some other time. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Preston in Denver's on the line. Hey, Preston. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're live and on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Speaking of Bush, I was intrigued yesterday when you were mentioning all of the Bush relatives who had some, you know, engineering contracts in Iraq or were setting up contracts for other businesses in Iraq, you know, Martin and Neil and William and all these Bushes I had never even heard of.
It's all in the family.
Amazing. And then that evening I go home and who do I find but Billy Bush hosting the Miss America pageant.
You're kidding.
I don't know if he's going to be in Iraq soon hosting the Miss Iraq pageant, maybe.
Now, who is Billy? That. Is he one of Jeb's kids?
I'm not sure what his relation is, if he's a Jeb kid or what. I know he is related, though. I saw in one of those glamorous magazines.
Well, and it was a Bush cousin who, at Fox News, called the election in Florida for Bush that caused the entire cascade of media, you know, in 2000 saying that Bush had won, which made it so difficult for Gore to basically recover his balance. Although, I still say Gore should have fought tooth and nail. They sent down James Baker with a shotgun. I mean, you know, James Baker is like, hey, we're going to take these people apart, you know. And the Gore response was, well, we need to talk about this. And, you know, no, you don't, Al, you need. But anyway, I'm revisiting ancient history, and that's not what you called about, Preston. Continue.
Well, actually, do you read the American Prospect magazine by chance?
I get it. The demands of this radio program, unfortunately, I don't have the time to read even a fifth of the stuff I would like to. It's been a while since I've read it.
I can imagine, definitely. I just wanted to let you know that you're mentioned in a letter to the editor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have
sent a note to them regarding some good progressive hosts that people might want to check out.
Oh, you wrote the letter?
Uh-huh.
And they published it?
Yes.
Well, God bless you. Thank you, Preston.
My pleasure.
That's marvelous.
And I'm hoping more liberals and Democrats start participating in these important forums where we have a place to speak in this country.
Yeah.
You know, the ditto heads, you may not agree with them, but, you know, they're participating. And Eisenhower said we all need to be at least part-time citizens in the affairs of the state. So
I agree. It's why I'm perhaps alone among my peers in not vilifying right-wing radio, because I think that the thing that we need to get rid of is not, you know, right-wing radio or left-wing radio. What we need to get rid of is the appearance of objectivity when in fact it's impossible. You know, it really started in the 70s and 80s. This idea of the press as an objective, and it came about as the result of media buyouts and mergers. You know, I used to live in a little town in Michigan that had two newspapers, and Detroit, the next big town over, had a whole bunch of newspapers. I mean, you know, from the socialist papers to Henry Ford publishing his anti-Semitic screeds. I mean, you know, there was the whole spectrum, and you could pick your news, and you could and I think that, you know, Fox News, I tip my hat to them at least in saying, you know, at least they're honest about their bias.
Yeah.
And I mean, well, they're not honest about it, but you know what I mean. I mean, everybody, you know, they don't try to they pretend that they're fair and balanced, but everybody knows what they're up to.
Yeah, and we just can't let them dominate the discussion. I mean, if we're quiet as this goes on over the airwaves, it's going to give a lot of people the impression that is what everybody is thinking.
Yeah, and the real heroes in my mind are the folks who are running the small independent radio stations. You know, Margaret called a little earlier from Illinois. I think she was listening to WINI in Carbondale. You know, those kinds of stations where you've got, you know, a small number of stations or one station, and they're trying to do a community service. They're doing a good job. And the same thing with the newspapers. You know, I really think that we should have a law in the United States, and Jefferson never explicitly talked about this, but it was implicit in his writings, that the press should be locally owned.
Yeah.
And of course there's going to be national press. Of course there's going to be national press, and you're going to have national. But there has to be a vital local press. You have to have a vital local press.
And I think that Air America may very well end up helping you out. Laura Flanders has done some really good work providing a platform to hosts like yourself and giving them some publicity over her show.
Yeah, well, she's going to be on this show next week.
Oh,
actually.
Great! Fantastic.
And, yeah, and she's good. And I think Air America is wonderful. I hope them so much success. I mean, if there's room on the right for Rush Limbaugh and then all those legions that follow him, there's certainly room on the left for Air America, me, and a whole lot of other people.
If you get a chance, Tom, I saw your piece on Common Dreams today regarding offshoring of jobs and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I know you have a new book coming out. I was hoping that you might be able to have a chance to create audio versions of the work that you do. I remember a trucker calling in and talking about what a huge impact unequal protection had on his father, but he himself didn't really have a chance to listen to it because he's an over-the-road trucker.
Yeah.
And if you have a chance to work with the medium of audio or CD, I think that would be really helpful.
I agree, Preston. We have, with several of my books, we have tried to get an audio publisher interested. And you know, it's step by step. It's something that I haven't really focused my attention on in the last year, and I should. And so thanks for the reminder. I'll get back on it.
One quick comment, if I may, before I let you go.
Yep.
Regarding the 9/11 Commission hearings and all of that, you know, very important work being done, and obviously we need to protect ourselves. There are some very angry elements in the world, in lots of places of the world. But I think it's also important that we don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, here in this country, I mean, we can imagine what the meetings are of people concerned about security in places like the Middle East or Colombia, where they're looking at us as the empire with a $400 billion weapons budget, with a place like the School of the Americas, which has been training all sorts of killers that go throughout Latin America, repressing labor organizers and peasant groups and indigenous populations. You know, I think
we could do a lot for our own security if we recognize the threats that we pose to so many other people around the world.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Preston. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. And in fact, you know, what Preston says there raises an interesting question. One of the folks in our chat room during the last break made the comment, they hate us because of our plumbing. Right. And George Bush, and his minions, they hate us because of our freedom. They hate us because of who we are. I wonder if anybody's considered that possibly they hate us because we prop up their dictators. Think about it. How many democratic institutions are there in the Middle East? Essentially none. You know, Israel, in my opinion, is a democracy. Arguably, the Palestinian Authority is a democracy. But that's it. And the House of Saud would not stand without us. The Shah of Iran would not have stood without us. The King of Jordan wouldn't, you know, the Emir of Kuwait. I mean, just go on down through the list. You want rape rooms? You want torture chambers? You want electric shocks in people's genitals? Go to the Middle East. Go to Saudi Arabia. Yes, they do all that stuff there. And we say, well, you know, they hate us because we're free. Well, you know, maybe. See, I don't see terrorists coming to the United States from France, from Germany, from Spain, from Italy. I don't see terrorists coming to the United States from the newly independent democracies of Eastern Europe. I don't see terrorists coming to the United States from South Africa. I don't see terrorists coming to the United States, by and large, even from Central and South America. Why? Because virtually all of these nations are democracies now. There's only 47, 48 nations left out of the 181 in the world that are not democracies in one form or another. And those ones that are not democracies, those ones that are tyrannizing their people, seem to be the ones we're supporting. The ones that we're keeping in business. Well, we need their oil. And if we just let them do what they wanted, they might not just sell it to us. They might cut a deal with Russia. Yes, our oil companies have to profit. Or China, for example. Yeah, I've been in China. I studied in China in 1986. I spent the month of November in China studying acupuncture at the Beijing International Hospital, acupuncture, the biggest teaching hospital in the world for acupuncture. It was fun. It was interesting. I was on my way someplace else. I could do it. I had the time. Louise and I were living in Germany at the time. We had sold a business. We had basically taken a year off. And it was incredibly cheap. It was like $135 a week, and that included room and board. And, you know, because the yuan, I mean, basically, people there, I could get a good meal for 5-6 cents. Literally, 5 or 6 cents. So anyhow, I've been there. And about three, this was in 86, about 3-4 years ago, I spent a week with the Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, in Tibet, or not in Tibet, in Dharamsala, India, his place of refuge, his home away from home. And you hear the stories from these people who fled Tibet as the Chinese came in. The Chinese murdered 1 million Tibetans. They're still killing them. There was a picture. There was a story. I remember this one guy told me this story in Dharamsala about how the reason that he fled Tibet. He was a young guy. He was in his 20s. And he fled with 4 of his family members, 3 of whom died on the trip. I mean, you have to cross the Himalayas, basically, to get to India, to this place of refuge, Dharamsala. And I never did get how they died, but I know that there are terrorists, there are people, there are robbers, there are bandits, there are people who just shoot people for fun. There are tigers, there are bears. In fact, one night when I was walking back to the home I was staying in, it was in a rural area near Dharamsala, and a large cat was tracking me.
I mean, about once every 3 or 4 months, somebody gets eaten by a tiger there. There are bears. People die of frostbite. Anyhow, the reason he fled, was because one of his younger brothers had gotten as a gift from a tourist a T-shirt that was silkscreened with a photo of John Lennon on the cover. John Lennon. John Lennon with his round glasses. And the Chinese authorities who had taken over Tibet, one of them saw that picture and thought it was the Dalai Lama, who looks a little bit like John Lennon, I suppose. Same glasses. And they took his little brother into custody and they interrogated him and tortured him until he died. And then they started coming after the other members of the family. They came in and they tore the house apart. Where are the... Because you can go... The penalty for having a picture of the Dalai Lama in your home in Tibet today is death. And they started tearing his house apart. They started coming after his relatives because they still hadn't figured out it was John Lennon. And what is the nation that we are giving most favored trade status to? What is the nation that our corporations are investing billions of dollars in? It's China! And then Taiwan, which actually has a democracy, they actually get to vote in their leaders. Taiwan says, you know, they have this debate, this public debate between the two main parties. And one of the guys who wants to be president of Taiwan says, you know, I think that we should declare our independence from China and we should ask them to take those 500 missiles that they have, that they claim that they have, everybody knows they have, pointed at us. I mean, it's only a couple hundred miles from Taiwan to China, this little strait. Taiwan is a fairly large island, but not, you know, it's not huge. I've been there, traveled around it. And he said, you know, we would like to be independent from the Republic of China, People's Republic of China. They're communist, we're not. They're a dictatorship, we're not. They kill their own people, we don't. And George Bush calls this guy up and says, lay off. The Bush administration officially reprimands Taiwan for talking about democracy. What has happened to America? 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Democrats. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Global warming could throw a wrench into the conveyor belt that moves water up and down the Atlantic Ocean. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Changes in the Earth's climate might dump a lot more rain and snow in the northern latitudes, and all that freshwater precipitation could dilute the seawater in the North Atlantic Ocean. If the North Atlantic gets less salty, northern Europe could get a lot colder. Ruth Curry is a physical oceanographer at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in Massachusetts. She examined changes in salinity across the Atlantic, and she says the salinity of the North Atlantic appears to be declining. She says that could change patterns of water circulation. For example, it could alter the currents of warm water, such as the Gulf Stream, that now move northward from the tropics and help keep much of Europe warm. Curry says the changes in salinity won't shut down the Gulf Stream, but in the future, its warm waters might not reach as far north as they do today.
And then the heat, the ocean warmth, will not flow as far north as it does now. And so that will cool the areas of Scandinavia, Great Britain, northern Europe, by about 2 to 6 degrees. That's what the best climate models predict.
Curry says these changes are extremely complex, and that reflects the nature of the Earth's changing climate.
Global warming changes the weather patterns. So it's bringing Arctic air down this winter and causing record-breaking cold temperatures in North America. And yet, in the summertime, we had blisteringly hot summers. That's the sort of thing that we're facing.
Curry's study of salinity in the Atlantic Ocean was published in a recent issue of the journal Nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sylvia was working as a waitress in Beaumont. She said, I'm moving away. I'm gonna get what I want. I'm tired of these small town boys that don't fast enough. I'm gonna find me one who wears a leather jacket and likes his living rough.
Oh my. Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Trisha in our chat room. Back when I was talking about the electrical genital stimulation of the Middle Eastern interrogator, said, I think Tom has stumbled onto some Dick Cheney therapy. Actually, you know, that's true. It's we have
started doing something that we had a very, very little bit of a national debate about, or discussion, or mention in the press. I'm not sure if it ever got around to being a debate about outsourcing torture. Yeah, we take prisoners and send them off to Saudi Arabia, for example, and let them interrogate them, because their constitutions don't forbid torture. Their laws don't make it against the law. And again, the world looks at us and goes, hypocrites. I mean, is this the example that we want to be setting for the world? The same thing, with Camp X-Ray down there at Guantanamo Bay. I mean, is this, we want to say to the world, okay, here's how democracy works, guys. You have a constitutional right to a quick and speedy trial and to representation by an attorney and to be faced by your accuser, unless we decide that you don't. And we put you in a place that's owned by our country, but it's not part of our country, and so we can say it's not our country and we can play technical legal games. Yes, that's how democracy works. That's what you should have in your nation. That's worth fighting and dying for. You should imitate us. The damage that this administration has done, not just to our reputation around the world in terms of people thinking well of us, but in terms of people thinking that's what democracy is, in my mind, one of the greatest sins of the Bush administration. This absolute destruction around the world of America's moral leadership. Thanks to Louise Hartman for producing our program today, to Brad Walrod in New York for editing and compiling our music. Thanks to our sponsors for putting us on the air. Thanks to Shelby over at RadioPower.org for streaming us out, and Ben and White Rose Society for keeping our archives going. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for dropping in, and thanks to you for listening. I do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services, from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today.